The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
I'm Mo Rocca, and I've got a brand new podcast. It's all about the people who have long fascinated me. The one thing they've got in common? They're all dead. The name of my brand new podcast? Mobituaries. From the 20th century's greatest entertainer.
He was everything. I mean, he could play any instrument. He could dance like a maniac.
To the founding father, who just doesn't seem to get much respect.
This guy did everything wrong. So there's no statue, there's no signature on the Declaration of Independence.
You'll learn new things about people you thought you knew.
Were you aware that the day of your inauguration, Audrey Hepburn died?
No.
You'll learn about people who aren't real.
They did not have room in the writing for the older brother because the Fonz became the older brother.
So join me this premiere season of Mobituaries.
This is the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
Capital accusations.
He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
Later, a new look at sexual abuse allegations against Michael Jackson.
I wouldn't be surprised if, once the film has been broadcast, new victims came forward.
And now, from the Capital One Bank Studios in the CBS News Washington Bureau, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Let's start this weekend with the fallout from Michael Cohen's public testimony to Congress Wednesday. The president's former personal attorney and fixer faced curious Democrats and skeptical Republicans, two of whom referred Cohen to the Justice Department Thursday, saying he lied during his sworn testimony. Chief Congressional Correspondent Nancy Cordes looks back.
Like a witness for the prosecution, the president's former fixer and lawyer said he and Mr. Trump committed crimes together.
I am ashamed that I chose to take part. I am ashamed because I know what Mr. Trump is. He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
With hundreds of people lined up outside, Cohen told the 42 members of the House Oversight Committee that the president broke federal campaign finance laws from the Oval Office.
He asked me to pay off an adult film star with whom he had an affair.
He says the president reimbursed him in installments so it would look like a retainer. Cohen also claimed that the president knew about stolen Clinton campaign emails before WikiLeaks released them.
Mr. Stone told Mr. Trump that he had just gotten off the phone with Julian Assange and that Mr. Assange told Mr. Stone that within a couple of days there would be a massive dump of emails that would damage Hillary Clinton's campaign. Mr. Trump responded by stating to the effect, "Wouldn't that be great?"
Trump associate Roger Stone and WikiLeaks both denied it, and Republicans said Cohen, facing 3 years in prison for a slew of federal crimes, shouldn't be believed. One of Cohen's crimes? Lying to Congress.
Nothing he says or produces has any credibility.
Cohen admits he lied to lawmakers about a Moscow real estate deal. Says he did it because he knew that's what Mr. Trump, who he served for a decade, wanted.
He would look me in the eye and tell me there's no Russian business and then go on to lie to the American people by saying the same thing. In his way, he was telling me to lie.
But he never directed you to lie to Congress.
He did not use those words, no.
Cohen also shared financial documents to demonstrate how Mr. Trump would inflate the value of his assets to rank higher on the Forbes billionaires list, then deflate them in order to pay lower taxes.
And was that done with the president's knowledge or direction?
Everything was done with the knowledge and at the direction of Mr. Trump.
Mr. Cohen, how long did you work in the White House?
I never worked in the White House.
That's the point, isn't it, Mr. Cohen?
No, sir.
Yes, it is.
With President Trump occupied in Vietnam, it fell to his sons to keep a running commentary on the hearing. Donald Trump Jr. tweeting, "Ha, ha, ha, ha. Michael Cohen begged to work at the White House, and everyone knows it." Cohen claimed their father repeatedly said racist things.
And he told me that black people would never vote for him because they were too stupid.
One of his non-answers was revealing, too.
Is there any other wrongdoing or illegal act
that you are aware of regarding Donald Trump that we haven't yet discussed today?
Yes, and again, those are part of the investigation that's currently being looked at.
Nancy Cordes, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
Let's talk about Cohen's testimony with former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe. He ordered an investigation into President Trump and has been a White House political target since. He's author of the new book, The Threat, How the FBI Protects America in the Age of Terror and Trump. Andrew, do you believe Michael Cohen?
Well, Steve, that's a very complicated question. Michael has some deep challenges to his credibility. As we all know, he pled guilty to lying to Congress. That is not what any agent or prosecutor wants in their star witness. But prosecutors know how to work with witnesses who have credibility problems. And they strengthen the witness's testimony by providing corroborative evidence. So that would be documents or recordings or the contemporaneous recollections of other witnesses who would support the first witness's account. So it was extraordinary to me how much of that material might be out there. I think Michael Cohen referred to much of that material in his testimony. So I think you can't completely discount the things that Michael is saying until we've had an opportunity to really evaluate the corroborative evidence.
Let's talk a little bit about the Russia probe. You describe in your book your work with Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who's on his way out of the Justice Department. What thumbprint do you think he leaves behind on that investigation?
I think Rod's experiences and performances over the last 2 years have been, from some perspectives, contradictory. There are elements of Rod's, Rod has done things that I think even he probably has a hard time reconciling. His participation in drafting the reasons for Director Comey's firing is something that I still question. However, Rod also did some incredibly bold and courageous things, like appointing the special counsel and protecting the special counsel and the special counsel's team through the course of their work. So, like all of us, I think Rod, will be judged by both those things that people support and things that people don't.
Would you be interested in ever running for office?
I would not. Thank you very much, but I don't see that in my future.
One other question I want to ask you is, you had a high-level security clearance. Jared Kushner does as well, and there's reports that the president overruled his own counsel, ordering his then-chief of staff, John Kelly, to grant Kushner, who has several conflicts, especially overseas with business, to grant him a high-level security clearance. Were you aware of that at all?
Steve, I'm only aware of it having read the articles that appeared. But what I will say is, from my own extensive experience with that process, the security clearances are granted only at the conclusion of a careful and thoughtful and extensive process in which multiple agencies weigh in, professionals who do this for a living weigh in, and ultimately a recommendation is given. If the articles are accurate, it appears that the president demanded the granting of a clearance to Mr. Kushner despite the negative recommendation of that fair and complete process. So that is something that concerns me greatly.
Former FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe on his new book, The Threat. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.
Coming up, President Trump's North Korean stalemate.
I'm never afraid to walk from a deal.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
The other big story of the week, President Trump's summit with North Korea's Kim Jong-un, leaving Hanoi, Vietnam with no agreement between the two leaders. Our correspondent, Stephen Portnoy, has more.
I'm never afraid to walk from a deal.
President Trump wrapped up his summit with Kim Jong-un earlier than expected. A joint agreement, which the White House press office said would be signed, never materialized.
Basically, they wanted the sanctions lifted in their entirety, and we couldn't do that.
The summit featured extraordinary exchanges between the North Korean dictator and the American press. Kim was asked by one journalist if he's ready to denuclearize.
If I'm not willing to do that, I won't be here right now.
That's a good answer. Wow, that might be the best answer you've ever heard.
It certainly was surprising to see the North Korean dictator take questions from the American press. The president at one point admonished reporters to not raise their voices with Chairman Kim. One journalist asked if the North Koreans might be willing to accept a U.S. office in Pyongyang for American diplomats. Both Chairman Kim and President Trump said they'd be open to the idea.
Stephen sat down in Hanoi with CBS News Face the Nation moderator Margaret Brennan and Asia correspondent Ben Tracy for the takeout.
So where are we at the end of all this?
There was no commitment, but they're going to continue to see each other is what actually they kind of walked away with. I wouldn't say he walked away empty-handed. He certainly didn't walk away with the kind of big deal he's been promising. So basically, they're leaving where they began without all the add-ons. They had made progress on some of the small sort of sweeteners, the things like the liaison offices, keeping diplomatic channels, but none of the really big stuff that is central to the question and the reason they're negotiating in the first place, which is dismantling the heart of the nuclear program.
Ben, the president said at a certain point you just have to walk away. What derailed this?
Well, the president's version of events is that Kim Jong-un came in and basically said, I want all the sanctions relieved, and in exchange I will give you partial denuclearization. And the president said that was a bad deal. We haven't heard yet the North Koreans' version of what happened, and they may not explain themselves. They don't have to, and they don't always do.
Asia correspondent Ben Tracy with Margaret Brennan, host of Face the Nation, and our own correspondent, Stephen Portnoy in Hanoi, for the takeout. Now to Israel, where the country's attorney general has decided to indict Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu for corruption. CBS News correspondent Robert Berger reports from Jerusalem.
Netanyahu is facing charges of bribery, fraud, and breach of trust after a long investigation into three corruption scandals. He allegedly made illicit deals for more positive media coverage and accepted lavish gifts from wealthy friends. Netanyahu claims innocence and says it's a witch hunt. Robert Berger, CBS News, Jerusalem.
U.S. peace talks with the Taliban restarting this weekend. Here's CBS News correspondent Cammie McCormick.
There may be some progress on a U.S. demand that the Taliban negotiate with the government in Kabul, with the formation of a national team of Afghans.
More members of the state police force and military in Venezuela are quitting. It comes amid increasing pressure, including from Vice President Mike Pence, on President Nicolas Maduro to step down and allow aid shipments in.
Vice President Pence turned up the pressure on Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro, announcing new sanctions against members of his inner circle.
These men work to block aid for people in need and suppress peaceful protests while their tyrant danced in Caracas.
Over the weekend, troops loyal to the embattled president fired tear gas and rubber bullets at Venezuelan citizens trying to reach U.S. aid.
To those members of Venezuela's armed forces, you will find no safe harbor, no easy exit, no way out.
During his trip to Colombia Monday, Pence met with opposition leader Juan Guaido, who declared himself Venezuela's interim president last month.
The United States was proud to be the first nation on earth to recognize you as the legitimate president of Venezuela.
The two leaders delivered humanitarian aid to Venezuelans who fled to Colombia. Some were moved to tears.
Have faith that under President Donald Trump's leadership, the United States of America and freedom-loving nations around the world will stand with you.
Penn said the U.S. wants a peaceful transition to democracy in Venezuela, but that all options are on the table to force President Maduro to step down. Hillary Lane, CBS News.
In Europe, spring arriving early. Here's correspondent Vicky Barker in London.
Whatever happened to cold, soggy, rain-soaked, miserable Britain? Forecasters say this has been the warmest February on record. Temperatures have approached 70 degrees this past week. It's left many here tutting about global warming, even though scientists say they can't confirm that's the cause. But fear not. Forecasters say the cold, raw, wintry weather should return this weekend, which is how Brits like their winters miserable. Vicky Barker, CBS News, London.
Back here in the U.S., it's too much rain for parts of Northern California.
The only way in and out of Guerneville is by kayak or canoe. The small town was inundated after the Russian River overflowed its banks. Floodwaters surrounded homes, submerged cars, and trapped anyone who didn't leave. More than two dozen towns along a 25-mile stretch of the river were evacuated. Along with Guerneville, Monte Rio is also essentially an island, and nearly 100 roads in Sonoma County are closed. An area weather station recorded more than 20 inches of rain over the past 3 days.
We're safe.
In Guerneville, at least 2,000 people are stranded.
Never have I seen it like this. It's scary.
Meg Oliver, CBS News, Forestville, California.
In Texas, human remains have been found in the wreckage of an Atlas Air 767 cargo plane that crashed into a shallow bay near Houston last weekend. On Friday, a cockpit voice recorder was recovered. Here's CBS's Chris Van Cleve.
Just twisted and mangled pieces of Atlas Air Flight 3591 remain. Atlas pilots Captain Rick Blakely and Conrad Aska died in the crash. So did Sean Archuleta, a Mesa Airlines captain. He hitched a ride on the Boeing 767 to get to work in Houston. His roommate came to the crash scene.
Super friendly and happy to be a family man. He wanted his own family, and he got it for a short time.
As the cargo plane was approaching Houston from Miami Saturday afternoon, air traffic controllers warned the pilots of rain ahead. Then silence. The question now is, why did the plane end up in a deadly dive? The 767 is widely used by major U.S. airlines and cargo haulers.
It's very unusual. The safety record of the Boeing 767 is exceptional.
Investigators sifting through the debris were met with conditions worse than the NTSB expected. Chris Van Cleve, Anahuac, Texas.
And on Friday, Washington Governor Jay Inslee launched his 2020 Democratic presidential campaign.
I'm Jay Inslee, and I'm running for president because I'm the only candidate who will make defeating climate change our nation's number one priority.
Up next, a new film tackles what could be Michael Jackson's legacy.
He will be one of the most notorious pedophiles in entertainment history.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
CBS News Radio presents the Intelligence Matters Podcast, taking you inside the biggest stories in national security.
How concerned are you?
I'm concerned that the Russians never left.
Each week, former acting director of the CIA, Michael Morell, interviews top leaders from the U.S. intelligence community.
James Clapper, Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, Mike Hayden.
And lucky for you, you won't need a security clearance to listen. The Intelligence Matters Podcast. Subscribe now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Stitcher. From the Capital One Bank Studios in Washington, this is the CBS News Weekend Roundup. Here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Two men, James Safechuck and Wade Robson, who say Michael Jackson sexually abused them as children, share their stories in a new HBO documentary, Leaving Neverland.
Secrets will eat you up. You feel so alone.
Every night that I was with him, there was abuse.
Gail King talked to the two for CBS This Morning.
He introduced me to masturbation. He said I taught him how to French kiss.
One of the ways I remember it starting is, Michael just sort of starting to touch my legs and touch my crotch over my pants. It progressed to him performing oral sex on me, him showing me how to perform oral sex on him.
Safechuck and Robson are appealing a judge's decision against them in their lawsuit against Michael Jackson's estate. They say they were pressured to deny the abuse for years. Michael Jackson's family has denounced the film. The Jackson family told Gail King Safechuck and Robson are opportunists.
Why do you think they're coming forward now?
Money.
You think it's all about money?
Well, it's all about money.
It's always been about money. I hate to say it, when it's my uncle, it's almost like they see a blank check. Because they've been taken care of their whole life. And I think that's the problem. These people felt that they're owed something. You know, instead of working for something, they blame everything on my uncle.
Let's talk now with the film's producer and director, Dan Reed. Dan, what do you make of that response from the Jackson family?
The person speaking there said it's all about money, and of course it is all about money. It's about the Jackson estate's money and their desire to protect what is a very valuable asset by sliming victims of child sexual abuse.
The Jackson family says you didn't reach out to them. What about the others that could help verify James and Rob's story? Michael's personal assistant, for instance, or the maid who claims she saw him naked with children at Neverland. Did you talk to them?
I didn't speak to the maid. I mean, I spoke to her son who was molested by Michael. So I did a lot of background research into the 1993 investigation, the LAPD and Santa Barbara Sheriff's Department investigation, which accompanied, you know, the first claims of sexual abuse. And then there was another police investigation, you know, 10 years later. And I did a lot of research into and tried to find anything that contradicted what James and Wade were telling me. But I mean, you know, one thing's very simple. No one denies that Michael spent many, many nights in bed with little boys, including Wade and James. So I don't need to think even the family deny that. The question is, what happened behind the closed door of the bedroom? Now, there are only two witnesses to that, because to my knowledge, there was never a third party in the bedroom. And, you know, one of those people is dead. Michael's not here to defend himself. So we've included in the film the statements he made while he was alive, rebutting and denying the allegations of child sexual abuse. So we think that we've represented the family's point of view. I mean, you know, to my knowledge, none of the family members were in, you know, were around to witness any sexual acts.
Did you alert the family to the film while you were producing it?
Not while we were producing. When it was finished, we I believe we notified Paris Jackson so that she knew what was coming. But, I mean, the family itself obviously has a strong vested interest in trying to disrupt the film and to try and stop it going to air. So we didn't want to, you know, make that any easier for them than it should be.
So you were concerned by alerting them to the film while producing it, they could launch legal efforts to stop its production and ultimately its release?
Well, they might do. I mean, you know, journalistically, there's no reason to reach out to the family because, as I keep saying, the sexual acts that we're describing and that the whole film hinges on were not witnessed by anyone except Jackson and the victims themselves. And it's clear that the family themselves are, you know, they've never denied that Michael spent night after night with little boys. And, you know, I do wonder what the family thought Michael was doing with those little boys.
Well, Dan, I will tell you, frankly, I think their stories are convincing. They're very emotional. It really captures not only the circumstances of their alleged abuse, but also, as you mentioned, their families, their mothers, the events that led up to this. It describes the alleged abuse as almost assembly line, years of grooming followed by new boys. Do you think there are more victims who claim they were abused that may come forward?
I wouldn't be surprised if once the film has been broadcast, new victims came forward. People, you know, there are little boys who we'd never heard about who might be out there and might have been nursing this in silence for many, many years. You know, there are people that we do know about who have denied that anything happened, and we have to believe them and leave them alone. I wasn't about to try and, you know, convince anyone to sort of come out if it wasn't time for them to do so. You know, it took Wade a long time to be ready, and it took him a long time to realize that what happened between him and Michael Jackson was actually sexual abuse. He thought it was love and friendship and devotion.
How did that affect their adulthoods?
Well, I think child sexual abuse seems to have this strange warping effect, which emerges later in life. It's very well documented. It's very well established. It's very common for victims of child sexual abuse to have psychiatric problems later in life, and that's what happened with James and Wade. But I think the turning point for Wade was when he had a child and he saw this vulnerable, fragile little thing and realized that what Michael had been doing with him was not really love, and it wasn't healthy, and it wasn't something that he could tolerate. Imagining, you know, when he thought of his own little boy receiving that kind of attention from Michael Jackson, it made him very, very angry. And so that made him begin to reassess his relationship with Jackson, which he'd always thought of as something good, you know, something positive.
Have the two men, James Safechuck and Wade Robson, repaired their relationships with their mothers?
I think they have to some extent. You know, James said a great thing on stage at Sundance. You know, they received a standing ovation from the audience, and James stood up and said, when asked that question, you know, forgiveness is not a line that you cross. It's a road that you take, and I'm taking that road, he said. So, you know, I think James and Wade will probably be in therapy for the rest of their lives, and part of that therapy is working out their relationship with their mothers. You know, they have a cordial relationship with their mums, and they speak to their mums often. You know, there's nothing that they're talking, and they love each other, but they're still trying to work out what the heck happened.
What do you think the legacy of Michael Jackson will be after this film is released?
What do I think the legacy will be? I mean, yeah. And, you know, Jackson's legacy is that he was a great entertainer and someone whose music has become the soundtrack to many happy moments in people's lives. And he's also, you know, he will be one of the most notorious pedophiles in entertainment history. How will people reconcile the great music with the very flawed man who did terrible things to children while pretending to be their benefactor? I don't know, and that's a conversation that America has to have with itself.
Leaving Neverland director Dan Reed in New York, the film airs Sunday and Monday on HBO. Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
Coming up, why a decision by U.S. Methodists is splitting the church. That's next on the Weekend Roundup.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
New England Patriots owner billionaire Robert Kraft pleaded not guilty to a charge of soliciting prostitution.
He's one of the most recognizable faces in the NFL, whose profile has soared with each Super Bowl trophy. Now, New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft stands at the center of a sex trafficking scandal.
Human trafficking is the business of stealing someone's freedom.
State Attorney Dave Ehrenberg did not mince words.
Human trafficking is built on force, fraud, or coercion. It is evil in our midst.
He charged the 77-year-old Kraft and hundreds of others with soliciting prostitution, a misdemeanor that could land him in jail for a year. According to police reports, Kraft engaged in sex acts on two consecutive days last month at Jupiter's Orchids of Asia Day Spa, including the morning of the AFC Championship game in Kansas City that Kraft attended. Police say they secretly planted hidden cameras to record interactions and transactions, including crafts, in at least 10 massage parlors. The going rate at the Orchids of Asia Spa, $59 for a half hour, $79 for an hour. A spokesperson for Kraft said they categorically deny that Mr. Kraft engaged in any illegal activity.
The NFL released a statement saying its personal conduct policy applies to everyone, and the league is promising to take appropriate action as warranted based on the facts. Anna Werner, CBS News, New York.
R. Kelly walked out of jail on sexual abuse charges after paying $100,000 bail. Here's correspondent Chris Martinez.
R. Kelly and his lawyer emerged from the Cook County Jail Monday evening, pushing through a crush of reporters and photographers to a waiting van. The Grammy-winning singer-songwriter was wearing an orange jumpsuit when he went before a judge earlier in the day. Kelly was arraigned on 10 counts of aggravated sexual abuse. His lawyer entered a not guilty plea.
No one has showed us any evidence that he has done anything wrong.
A grand jury indicted Kelly, who surrendered to police Friday. The allegations date as far back as 1998 and involve four women. Prosecutors say three were minors at the time.
All of these young girls are not lying, ladies and gentlemen. It is impossible.
Attorney Michael Avenatti represents two of the accusers.
Had these victims not been black, and had they not come from, in many cases, disadvantaged households or households of a lower socioeconomic status, this guy would not be walking free today.
The R&B singer came under renewed scrutiny in January after a documentary called Surviving R. Kelly aired. The series depicted the 52-year-old as a chronic abuser.
We had a lot of women that we talked to, because he's been doing this for almost 30 years, who would corroborate details from the other women but wouldn't come on camera themselves.
If convicted on all charges, Kelly could face up to 70 years in prison. Chris Martinez, CBS News, Los Angeles.
A judge's gag order on media was lifted earlier in the week, allowing journalists to report Australian Cardinal George Pell's convictions on sexually abusing two boys.
Cardinal George Pell was heckled as he left the Melbourne court.
Hey, you're a monster.
One of the most powerful men in the Catholic Church, the former Vatican treasurer and top advisor to Pope Francis, was convicted of sexually abusing two 13-year-old boys in 1996. The verdict had been suppressed for more than 2 months due to a gag order imposed by the court, meant to avoid prejudicing a jury for a separate trial, now dropped due to a lack of evidence. Pell has always maintained his innocence.
The whole idea of sexual abuse is abhorrent to me.
His legal team filed an appeal. The Vatican said it would await that verdict before taking any action, but confirmed restrictions on Pell.
Cardinal Pell is prohibited from exercising public ministry and from having any voluntary contact whatsoever with minors.
This follows the Vatican sex abuse summit, criticized by victims for the lack of concrete results. Father Hans Zollner was one of the summit organizers.
We see that nobody is untouchable. We have seen this with the former cardinal and priest McCarrick. We have seen this now with Cardinal Pell.
Those consequences could include being defrocked or removed from the College of Cardinals. Seth Doan, CBS News, Rome.
A decision by the Methodist Church to ban gay clergy and same-sex marriage ignited new concerns about its future amid the fallout.
The One Church plan does not agree with the words of our Savior.
The decision by the Worldwide Conference pleased traditionalists but raised doubts about the modern Methodist motto, open hearts, open minds, open doors.
Please do not ignore our voices.
Traditionalists said loosening the faith's ban on same-sex marriage and ordination of gay and lesbian clergy defied the word of God. Like Reverend Keith Boyette, they said LGBT members are welcome up to a point.
I believe that those who engage in the practice of homosexuality are not living a life that pleases God.
Amid an emotional debate, new rules were adopted to stiffen punishment for heretics. Clergy who officiate at same-sex weddings could be suspended without pay for a year and defrocked if they do it again. But Reverend Thomas Berlin said tradition for tradition's sake is self-destructive.
You will be putting a virus into the American church that will make it very sick.
But delegates were mindful of where the church is growing. 30% of members are from Africa, where many nations outlaw homosexuality itself. Matthew Pearson is a gay minister from California who rejects the traditional plan and said it's possible a new church is being born.
We are prepared to live into our full calling as a church. What that looks like at this point, I don't know.
Dean Reynolds, CBS News, Chicago.
The state of Texas has put a 70-year-old man to death.
Billy Koble became the oldest inmate ever executed in Texas. In 1989, he killed the grandparents and brother of his estranged wife outside Waco. Spokesman Robert Hurst says the veteran's last statement twice included the phrase, "That'll be $5.
He decided that he would use that catchphrase whenever someone would talk to him to see if they would give him money the way that the children in Vietnam were given money by the soldiers when he was over there.
As that was happening, Koble's son, daughter-in-law, and a friend had to be removed from the witness booth for screaming and pounding on the glass. They were jailed for resisting arrest. Barbara Schwartz for CBS News, Dallas.
Walmart avoiding some heat. Here's correspondent Steve Kathan.
There's word the Walmart store in Marion, North Carolina has found a new job for greeter Jay Melton.
Jay is tops. When you walk into the store, you feel welcomed in Walmart.
Melton, a 17-year employee with cerebral palsy, faced losing his job and got news coverage along with others now that the company wants those workers to perform more physical tasks. The Walmart CEO has outlined specific steps now that stores can take to keep those employees on the job. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
Coming up, the brutal train trip, stranded on the CBS News Weekend Roundup.
The CBS News Weekend Roundup after this short break.
This is The Takeout with Major Garrett.
Every week, an extended conversation at a restaurant in our nation's capital with newsmakers like Democratic Senator Mark Warner.
What we want to try to do is give the American people the truth.
Jim Bridenstine, administrator of NASA. How close are we to space tourism?
I think we're very close.
Trump cabinet member Linda McMahon.
First time that I met Donald Trump was at a Rolling Stones concert.
Politics, policy, and a side of pop culture. The Takeout with me, Major Garrett.
On the CBS News Weekend Roundup, here's correspondent Steve Dorsey.
Think you've had a bad air travel experience? Listen to passengers stuck on a stranded Amtrak train in Oregon for 36 hours.
It is dark, there is more snow on the way, and we are stranded for another night. Please send help if possible. Thanks.
Desperate pleas from stranded passengers after their train slammed into a fallen tree.
They were stuck in the snowy Oregon mountains.
I'll show you a little bit what it's like on here.
For two straight nights, 183 passengers aboard Amtrak's Coast Starlight tried to make the best of it, living on a diet of snack foods, trying to stay warm and passing the time. To make matters worse, parents ran out of diapers.
Luckily, a really nice lady came in and gave me some pull-ups.
36 hours later, the train was finally moving again, dropping off some passengers in Eugene, Oregon. For some, it was a train ride from hell.
Amtrak Corporation did a horrible job of communicating to us what was going on.
Long, relatively uncomfortable, but you know, it was not that bad.
In a statement, Amtrak says, "We made every decision in the best interest of the safety of our customers and that passengers will be getting refunds."
Carter Evans, CBS News, Portland.
A new effort to protect kids online.
The FTC says it's reached the largest ever settlement in a case involving children's privacy. The operator of the video sharing app, now known as TikTok, agreed to pay $5.7 million over allegations it illegally collected personal information from children. The FTC says the app, which is popular with teenagers, violated the act, which requires kid-oriented websites to get parents' consent before collecting data from children under 13. Pam Coulter, CBS News.
This weekend, 48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant is investigating the 2008 death of Katie Major and her 10-month-old daughter, River Lynn. Peter joins us from New York. Peter, tell me how Katie and her daughter died.
Well, this is still a bit of a mystery. Katie's body, the mother, was found alongside a railroad track outside the small town of Monk's Corner, South Carolina, about a 40-mile drive from Charleston. She had apparently been hit by a train, and she had a large laceration, a pretty good head wound, but her entire body was in one piece, which surprised a lot of people if you're hit by a high-speed train. And her 10-month-old daughter, River Lynn, was found in a pond about 30 feet from the railroad tracks. Her body was unmarked, and she had drowned. And officials of Berkeley County, South Carolina, when they arrived at the scene, they said this looks like a murder-suicide. And basically, in the course of just a short period of time, a few days, that's the determination, is that this was a suicide by Katie Major, the young 26-year-old mother.
This became then a cold case, but why did police reopen it?
Police reopened it in part because of 48 Hours. Back in 2015, three producers were in South Carolina working on another story when the mother, Vicki Hall, the mother of the two victims, her granddaughter and daughter, approached and said, "You know, there's a story for you I wish you would investigate because I believe my daughter was murdered and my granddaughter was murdered." And she had collected, Vicki, hundreds of pages of documents and done interviews all on her own because she was very frustrated that the sheriff's department made this determination so quickly of a suicide. So our people pored over that and then started making some calls of their own, and it looked so suspicious to them, they took a meeting with a new sheriff in Berkeley County who had a new attitude, wanted to hear about the case. A cold case unit was formed and assigned to this story. And now that cold case unit has said they do not believe that this was a suicide, and they're on the verge of making a decision whether it was an accidental death or if it was murder.
And can you give us some hints about where this trail now leads?
Well, right now the trail leads back to Aaron Major, who was the husband, the father of River Lynn. The cold case unit says to us that he has told a number of lies in the course of this case. And so the cops today want to talk with Aaron Major, but he has an attorney and is refusing to cooperate. But right now he has been listed as the suspect in this case.
48 Hours correspondent Peter Van Sant on the Weekend Roundup. You can catch 48 Hours Saturday nights on CBS TV or stream it anytime on CBS All Access. Thank you, Peter.
Great, thank you.
A tree native to India that's been used as food and medicine for centuries is taking foodies and health nuts by storm.
in this country.
Divya Alter serves a special tea at her New York City restaurant, Divya's Kitchen. It's made with powder from the leaves of a moringa tree, like this young plant she's growing.
This is going to grow into a big tree.
Moringa is a true superfood, one of the world's most nutritious plants.
People who don't know and ask, when I explain it to them, they're like, yes, I need this.
A potential anti-inflammatory, moringa has high levels of protein and contains multiple vitamins and minerals.
My research has really been also on some of the medicinal aspects.
Carrie Waterman is working with UC Davis on a moringa project in East Africa. The hardy plant thrives in challenging environments and may be a tool to combat global hunger.
So number one, have it as a food security crop within their compounds and then sell to local markets and then potentially to export markets.
Oakland-based Cooley Cooley Foods sells moringa powder, nutritional bars, and smoothies. Company founder Lisa Curtis first encountered moringa as a Peace Corps volunteer in Niger.
I did a little research and I was like, this plant is incredible. Why aren't more people eating it?
The company partners with small farmers in 11 countries, including Pierrette, a widowed mother who was fighting for survival in West Africa.
She ended up starting a moringa business. She now employs 122 women.
Moringa is taking root here in California, Florida, Hawaii, and Texas, and sprouting up in kitchens worldwide. Tom Hansen, CBS News, New York.
Finally this weekend, beer for breakfast, or breakfast for beer.
Yellow, purple, pink, and red.
A beer company in Virginia is taking a cue from Lucky Charms cereal with a limited edition IPA that's magically ridiculous. Smart Mouth Brewery is ready to release Saturday Morning for adults who remember the days when Saturday mornings were a time you sat around watching cartoons and playing games. A spokesperson says it's a 6.6% ABV beer brewed with in-house toasted marshmallows and dehydrated mallow bits. The nose is sweet and citrus with orange and pear aromas. The body soft and pillowy with a slight cereal taste. Deborah Rodriguez, CBS News.
That does it for the weekend roundup. Thanks for listening. The show's always online on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and Spotify. We want to get your feedback. Drop us a line at weekendroundup@cbsnews.com and let us know where and how you're listening. The Weekend Roundup is produced at the CBS News Washington Bureau. Lou Walker is the technical supervisor. Jake Rosen is the intern. Have a great week. I'm Steve Dorsey, CBS News.